The Old Testament reading for Palm Sunday, which also has been called the Sunday of the Passion, is Deuteronomy 32, verses 36 through 39. This text comes, it's a small portion of the song, or a song of Moses, which is kind of almost like a last will and testament, but it's also a kind of survey of what has happened and what is sort of expected to happen in terms of the relationship between Yahweh and his people. And by kind of revisiting that, there are echoes of some of the Deuteronomic sermons, especially in terms of inviting people to look back at past activities of God and of themselves, which is kind of a rehearsal of some stuff that occurs in Deuteronomy 4, where Moses invites the people to look back to the very beginning of time to see whether there ever has been a God who has acted in behalf of his people in the way that Yahweh has done in behalf of Israel. The part of the song leading up to this particular text argues already for the reliability, the trustworthiness of God, and for the untrustworthiness, the unreliability of his people. And yet when we get to the text, there is a kind of turning point, because now what God has done, what Yahweh has done or will do to sort of oppress his people and bring them to repentance, when he sees that that has had its proper effect, he promises also then to deliver them. So we begin at, might also note that the verse immediately before the text is the one where we get what the English versions have Yahweh speaking, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay." And the place of that verse, in the overall song, is one that that establishes how God will act completely or thoroughly, in order to bring about the result that he's aiming at. So that it is sort of to me belongs vengeance, but it also has to do the word shalem, related to the root shalom or shalom, has to do with completeness, a totality of action, and that's what brings us the onset of a kind of day of judgment for Israel is what brings us to the starting point of this text. Okay, verse 36: Ki yadin Yahweh amo Baal Avadal Yithneham. For Yahweh will judge or adjudge or even vindicate his people, and about or upon his servants he will show due compassion. The root din is much less often used than forms of shafat, including mishpat, but the semantic understandings are largely the same. Deen just seems to be used more often in poetic context, but doesn't appear to have any additional nuances. So the judgment paralleled with the hit pe'el of Nacham, to show compassion, shows that the judgment will result in a positive conclusion rather than something that is will render a verdict of guilty, let's say. The remainder of the verse, these things will happen. Ki yireh ki azlat yad va'efes atzur va'azuv. They will have ki at the very beginning of this line, often translated at this point, when he, that is Yahweh, will see, And yet it's also, you know, you could make the case for saying it's because he will see that his work has taken its proper effect. When he will see, or because he will see that, key following verbs of sensing, cognitive action, things having to do with the senses and so forth, key usually introduces the content of what is seen or thought or whatever. Because or when he sees that, the hand or strength, you know, implied of the people is gone. Azal. A little bit unusual with the tau there. Almost looks like they could have pointed it as potentially a participle in construct, the goneness, so to speak, of their hand or strength. That when he sees that strength is gone, and the last little colon there is interesting because ephes is a particle that means kind of done, over, at an end, and the atzur and azuv are both kalpassive participles. The first one having to do with having been restrained, and the second with having been abandoned. ESV treats it as there is no one left, neither bond or slave, nor set free. So using the root atzar to talk about bondage and the root azav to talk about having been let loose, I think that it could also be, especially given the fact that you have the ephes and then you've got atzur va'azuv, that it could be that this is a way of sort of accenting the helplessness that they are done. It's kind of like the people are themselves over. Their strength has gone away, so that they have no resource left. They are or have been restrained, which is in a sense having been put in their place, and that they are abandoned in the sense of not having any sort of perceptible resources for themselves. In other words, they stand completely isolated. And it's at that point, when the people hit rock bottom, that Yahweh promises to act for their rescue. Verse 37, Ba'amar, he will say, this is what now God will speak, A Eloheimo, where are their, or his, gods? The mem in there is unusual. That's actually part of the suffix. So Elohe is the typical combining form from Elohim, but the mo is the suffix. We encounter the same thing in the next line with Zivachemo, and also in the very last word of verse 35, Lamo, Lamed plus the pronominal suffix. With the mem, it is also, it's a very rare form, but it is one that, if it's going to be found, it'll be found in poetic texts such as this one. So where are his or their gods? Let's see. Yeah, notice that in 36, the people are referred to as the collective people, Amo, his sort of singular people, but then they are also referred to in a plural, more distributed kind of thing with the avadal, his servants. So here, where is or where are his gods, where are their gods, the final meaning is the same. The rock they sought refuge in, tsur chasayu vo. Let's see, chasayu is kal, perfect, third plural common of chasa, to seek or take refuge, and tsur is rock. And it is interesting just to go back through, even in English, and notice how many times the notion of rock occurs in this song. Here it is sort of hypothetically applied to the wrongful gods that Israel has. Elsewhere, the emphasis is on Yahweh is the only true rock. But the idea of someone who can be counted on, who is trustworthy and reliable, that understanding of rock is prominent throughout the song. Verse 38 continues the inquiry, Asher chelev zevachemo yokelu yishtu yayin nesikam. Who, this is referring to the gods, or which, the chelev is fat. The apparatus down below says that in some texts they have, I guess it would be chelevei. In other words, they make a plural construct. The yod shows up so that it is fat of their sacrifices. And again, zevachemu, chemo, zevachim, drop the im ending, make it a tsere yod and add the in this case, the poetic suffix. The gods presumably eat, so in other words, smoothing it out, who eat the fat of their sacrifices, and Asher probably governs also the last colon in that line, who drink the wine of their libations or drink offerings or something like that. We get a picture of how it is that Israel has sort of worshipped these gods by providing these sacrifices and offerings that presumably these gods will consume, and yet of course they don't. The remainder of the verse now has a series of jussives. Yakumu vayazru azrukem vihi Alekem Sithra. Let them arise, the gods, and let them help you, and let them be or become for you, in your behalf, upon you, a hiding place. In verse 20 of this same psalm, Yahweh says, I'm going to hide my face from them, and he uses the root satar. Here, you just sort of see how the overall tenor of the psalm is to talk in terms of people who have looked elsewhere than Yahweh for a hiding place and refuge. And what he's saying is that you're not going to find any help. The fact that in verse 36, they have come to the end of their resources, in terms of trusting these other gods, they are left helpless, and what Yahweh is sort of doing is showing them the logical conclusion of their apostasy. So that brings them at rock bottom, and he says, look, you don't have anything, and these gods in whom you've trusted, they will not be able to rise up to help you. 39 brings us the good news. Ru'u ata ki ani hu v'ein Elohim imadi. See now that, again, following a sense verb, ra'ah, see now that I am he, or I am the one. The Ein Elohim, and there does not exist a God alongside or besides me. Ani Amit Va'achye. Next line. I cause to die, hithiel imperfect first singular common of mut, to die. So I kill, and then a pael imperfect of first singular common of chaya. So and I make alive. So I kill and I make alive or give life. Mahatsti va'ani erpa. I, machatz is one of these sort of smite words. You know, so I you know, strike or afflict, maybe. I afflict and I, notice the emphasis brought by the independent personal pronoun, ani, and I heal. And you could do it as the machatzti, as I have struck or afflicted or smitten, but I will heal or restore. Va'ein miyadi matzil. And there does not exist from my hand a rescuing one. A hithiel participle of natsal, the nun has assimilated in the tzare. So there is no one who can rescue or deliver from my hand. Okay, what do we kind of do with this? Again, there is the assertion of the complete reliability of God. You know, no other God stands up. No other God can do what Yahweh promises to do. The Old Testament always seems willing to allow the argument that there might be other gods, but systematically destroys that notion for Israel so that they understand that there is no other God but Yahweh, period. That no matter what it is that others worship, only Yahweh saves. Now, the thing is that coming into Palm Sunday, and of course, sort of keeping in mind not only the triumphal entry, but the kinds of things that will eventuate in Holy Week, the thing is that it's probably a twofold thing. One is that approaching Good Friday, sort of from the time of his arrest through his crucifixion and death, Jesus is substitute. He is, he takes on our sin and he endures the being at the end of his strength. He does that for us. In him, we need to see that we have that he stands like us without any resource before God, and he takes on the totality of the affliction, the smiting from God that is due us. And yet Jesus trusts the Father throughout, knows that his Father and God will deliver him. And in his being delivered, then we also are delivered. So that the kind of the inseparability on two counts. One is the connection between us and our predicament and what Jesus does in our behalf. That connection needs to be understood in terms of his forsakenness and so on. But then his equally true, inextricable or inseparable connection with the Father means that his trust in the God of Israel, in Yahweh, the one who takes life but who gives it also, that consummate trust is now his, and directing it toward God is the thing that should also drive our faith. The confidence that when, as Dr. Jack Preuss puts it, the answer to the problem of God is God. So that when God is the one who stands to judge us, he remains also the only one in whom we can confidently trust and depend on him to decide our case and to vindicate us.